You and I back together again, kicking off a Monday, March 27th, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We had breaking news as the show started surrounding another tragic school shooting. University of New Haven senior lecturer Ken Gray joined us later on to the show to talk about the law enforcement response to that shooting. And John Vazzano from the Barnum Festival joined us to talk about an upcoming cigar night fundraiser. Well, unfortunately, another tragedy, a shooting, and we're already getting conflicting reports on this, which is why I always say, and I'll say it again today, and this is what I want to start with, is you and I are back together on a Monday for a fresh week. We need to wait a while to find out all the facts of this case. Now, apparently, some of the facts carry in all the different versions of this are that three adults and three children were killed tragically at this school, a private Christian elementary school. It's called the Covenant School on the outskirts of Nashville, Tennessee. I guess the shooting began, they're saying here, at 10:13 a.m. The shooter was shot and killed 14 minutes later, thankfully. Pretty quick response there by police, all things considered, at 10:27 a.m. All right, so it began at 10:13. The shooter was taken out by police at 10:27 a.m. Now, the original reports, and I'm seeing split reports here, the original reports here, and some are still up, I'm seeing on media sites, saying the shooter was a teenaged girl armed with two assault rifles, and a pistol. But now I'm seeing some other reports, some broadcast reports, that say the shooter was actually a 28-year-old woman. So those are two vastly different things. What I mean in situations like this, and I was talking about this with people here at the station before we came on with this sad news today on this Monday, is, you know, the details of this case, even a case that's based in tragedy here. I mean, it's ultimately tragic that, you know, six people are dead, three adults, three kids at a school, and I'm sure we'll know if the school had any security. There's already reporting that the shooter entered this Covenant Academy through a side door. But again, it's a perfect example, as tragic as it is, about how narratives form before, during, and after, or I should say during and after tragedies like this. I mean, immediately upon the early reports of this, you heard it was a teenage girl, so your immediate question, and I confess, as was mine, is you hear this and your immediate question, doesn't matter where you really come down on this politically, there'll be plenty of time for that, and it's already started. That's a whole nother thing I want to touch on. But in the original version of this, which still might play out to be true, who knows? Again, you're kind of in the fog of war thing now, so you're trying to, you know, find out what's real and what's incorrect. But originally, you would see this headline that I'm looking at here now that says teenage girl armed with two assault rifles and a pistol. And you'd say to yourself, you know, well, how is that possible? And then your mind goes 1,000 different directions. Your mind goes just 1,000 different directions, saying, well, how is this possible? When you hear teenage, what is teenage to you? It's obviously, the inference here would be that it would be a minor, 17, 16, 15, and then your mind kind of wanders on this. Well, how would somebody that age get their hands on two assault rifles and a pistol? But now we see these headlines breaking, and NBC, which is our national news affiliate, they at least at the moment are quoting police who say a 28-year-old Nashville woman was the shooter. Now, let's put that aside. As horrible as it may be, and as tragic as it may be for the moment, but I'm telling you, the investigation is not even complete here. The crime scenes have not been fully analyzed. But just, I'm telling you, as sure as you can set your watches and your clocks by it, all the political yammering has started on this. Certain folks didn't waste time as they normally don't, and took this to start hammering home political points. And I get that. That's kind of who we are. That's kind of what these things have tragically delved into. It's all become political fodder. Hey, some adults are dead, some kids are dead, but man, I can make my point here. Either way, whether you're pro-gun or anti-gun. And my God, can we just wait? Honestly, it's so sad, but it's so predictable. Can we just wait? I'm not saying that you can't ever look at this in a scenario of what incidents like this mean and will mean, because you know they're going to happen again, and they've happened previously. And like I say, I lost a very dear loved one years and years and years ago, back in late 1978, due to a school-based shooting. So I kind of know from whence I speak on this. I remember getting that phone call when somebody told me what they had heard happened. I said, this has to be a dream. I'm not hearing this. I mean, this has to be a dream. So I know how it can affect families. And again, as a parent out there whose son is now 29 and quite a young man, but I always did fear something like this would happen. But be that as it may, we need to, as a society, we need to take a breath here. Just if it's for 5 or 6 hours, if it's for a day, and we need to know all the specifics of a case like this before we sit back and say, well, it's obviously the fault of X. It's more than likely the fault of Y. It's definitely the fault of Z. Because we are so tight and so tightly wound and tightly strung about this stuff that our natural inklings now are just to snap on one side or the other and use something like this to make a point. Look, I was talking about this with somebody here in the office at Connoisseur before I went on the air. Here's the bottom line. Whether you are a pro-gun person, a staunch pro-Second Amendment person, a staunch anti-Second Amendment person, whether you're somewhere kind of in the middle, you kind of see the point of both sides and you say to yourself, okay, but we need to have common sense laws. We have hundreds of thousands of gun laws across this country. But here's the point. Guns aren't going away. They're at least in any sort of reckoning of a short term or even a long term, however you define that to yourself. Guns aren't going away in a country of, 340, 50, 60 million people, whatever the official population of the U.S. is today, there are over 400 million guns. There are over 400 million guns. The FBI conducts, although some would make you think this doesn't happen, the way they talk about background checks, the FBI conducts something close to several hundred thousand or a million background checks a month. Guns are fully stitched into the American fabric. Now, we can debate that all day, all night. We can take weeks, days, months to debate that. But I think the pertinent thing here is just to wait until all the facts are out. Now, the thing I wonder here, and I wonder openly here, is my first thought on all these things, no matter how bad these shootings are or where or when they happen, my initial thought is always, was there any previous encounter between whomever fired shots in this or any situation? Now, a lot of times there's not. But one of my go-to phrases to use in a situation like this, a lot of times these things do not happen in a complete vacuum. They don't. Sometimes they do. A lot of times you hear police say, well, we didn't have any previous contact with the suspect or the shooter. Or you hear, well, the shooter was able to legally acquire these guns. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. What are your thoughts on this? Agree, disagree? Again, the political finger-pointing, the sniping has already begun. I just think we need to take a breath. Now, having said that, I'm sure none of the parents involved here or any of the loved ones or the relatives or friends of these victims want to hear me or anybody else say we need to take a breath here. And I know, because I've been on that side of it. My family was on that side of it for several months back in the late 70s. But as we move forward, you have to understand that there are 400 million guns plus here in the U.S. Tragically, I think no matter how optimistic somebody can be on this, maybe we can make a difference, but the sheer numbers indicate that this is going to be a, at least in my mind, I could be wrong, is going to be a continuing problem. Still digesting the breaking story here. Another six people killed at a Nashville private elementary school here. Three students, three teachers, police taking out a 28-year-old female gunman here. Joining us right now is Ken Gray. He's senior lecturer of criminal justice, homeland security, and emergency management at the Lee College of Criminal Justice at the University of New Haven, with a long and deep law enforcement background. Ken, good to have you on. Sad we have to have you on in these sorts of situations, but thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Paul. That's what I was just thinking, is that whenever we talk, it's always whenever there's some type of tragedy.
Yeah, and Ken, I guess on the upside here, we are hearing, though, that the quick response, Ken, of the local police there may have prevented this from being even worse.
Oh, absolutely. So as we know right now, there are six victims of the shooter, three students, three staff members there at the school. We're not hearing anything as to number of wounded, if there were any wounded. That is unusual in a shooting like this, is that you usually have more wounded than you have dead. And so there may be yet other information to follow, or this may have been a case where she killed everyone she shot.
So, Ken, when law enforcement gets on the scene here, and I guess this is kind of the polar opposite of what happened in Uvalde there, I guess they've got to use what their training, their instincts, and I guess, Ken, from what we've heard here, they were just able to kind of hone in on the shooter here by listening to where the shots were coming from.
So that's what you do in active shooter response, is that when you're utilizing the active shooter response technique, you get enough officers to make an effective team, and then you go towards the sound of shooting with the idea that you have got to stop the shooter from shooting anyone else. You've got to stop the shooter dead in their tracks. And so when the police entered into the school, they entered into the first floor. The shooter was on the second floor. They heard gunshots. They moved up to the second floor and took out the shooter.
And Ken, I would imagine the training here helps in as dangerous of a situation, Ken Gray, as this is. you know, they're trained for this. They have to be in, like, go mode, right? I would think that any sort of hesitation or worry about their own bodily safety could cost lives here.
Well, that's what happened in Uvalde. In Uvalde, the officers were doing an active shooter response. They met resistance. They backed up, and they stopped going forward with the active shooter response and switched over to a barricaded hostage situation. In this case, the officers there in Nashville continued their pursuit forward and took out the shooter and stopped further death from happening.
Again, getting expert analysis from Ken Gray at the University of New Haven on this tragic Nashville shooting. It was a female shooter, 28 years old. And there is a belief that she was a former student. Three students killed, three staff members as well. Six total deaths. Ken, what's the status here about finding out who shooters are? I mean, obviously, step one, once he or she is neutralized, is you check for ID on the person, right?
That's right. Well, she came into the school driving a car. That car has a tag on it. They were able to identify her through the tag of the car, get a picture of her photo from her driver's license. You've got the shooter's body there. Compare the photo with the shooter, and you've got a possible ID. Then there, you've got to confirm that ID, and that will take things like fingerprints or family members being able to identify her. But I think that we are still in the early stages of this investigation. But I think the shooter identification is probably pretty much known by the police at this time, and that we'll hear about it at their next news conference that should be coming up here pretty soon.
And Ken, obviously, the question then shifts from who is this person? We now know who this is with a little background to. How'd she get the guns? And I'm sure between the federal and state and local databases, they've probably already run that, too, about possible purchases, right?
Yeah, I would think that they're running that information down even as we speak. Something very unusual. And first off, this whole thing is very unusual. Mass shooters are not normally female. I was looking down through the list on Mother Jones in their mass shooter database, mm-hmm. and out of the over 100 shooters, only about six have been female. All right. Secondly, this shooter was carrying two assault weapons, assault rifle type weapons, and a handgun. It's very unusual for a female shooter to be carrying that amount of munition with them. And then she entered apparently through a side door. Mm. And so that goes back to the school security programs that you should only have one area of access for a school. But this is a private school, and so that the rules may not apply to them. They don't have a resource officer either. And so those are two things that I will probably figure prominently in the vulnerability of this school for such a risk.
Ken Gray, HIPAA laws and medical privacy laws being what they were, are, and probably will be, is there any way to find out whether or not or to look into any medical and or psychiatric treatment that she may have had, or are there roadblocks there? Not saying there was any, but I think you know where I'm coming from here. Is there any way to find out legally by law enforcement or by the feds or the TBI or whatever, whether or not she had any medical or mental health treatment?
There's not a single database that you can go to and find that information out. If she ever had any complaints against her or any criminal charges against her, which required her to be mentally evaluated, that information would be in the arrest records or previous type of police records. But other than that, there is no one central repository that would show that type of information.
Hey, Ken, how about, I was just thinking about this, maybe not this either. What about prescription records? Do those exist on any sort of federal mass database? Can law enforcement access those? That may be one angle here, or are those off limits too?
Those are off limits also. HIPAA protects prescription databases.
Ken, finally, you mentioned two things here, you know, building security and, you know, geez, I'm a little frustrated here. I thought we learned this after Sandy Hook. And I also feel, Ken, that this will again feed into the controversy, which I don't think there should be. That's just my opinion. I know it's a hot topic of whether or not every school should at least budget for at least the heavy school hours of having an armed resource officer there.
So that's true here in Connecticut for schools, but private schools fall outside those rules. Of course, this is down in Tennessee. They may have different state rules down there, but apparently this church school did not have the requirement for or did not have a resource officer there. The police in this particular case apparently were there on the scene and dealing with the problem within 15 minutes. But 15 minutes is a long time when you have an active shooter. I am surprised with the low number of casualties we have here. I'm expecting to see the potential of more injuries come up. There has been some that hasn't been released yet.
Ken Gray, Senior Lecturer, Criminal Justice, Homeland Security, and Emergency Management at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences at the University of New Haven. Ken, take care. Appreciate the time on this tragic day, and we'll talk down the road, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right, there you go. Issues that are obviously going to pop up in the next few days. And this was sort of one of the things that was flying through my mind on this as well. How do they get in, and was there a cop there? And I know there's a big controversy now. And again, like Ken said, and the other lawmakers are saying, this was not a public school. This was a private school. So in most cases, if you are not receiving any sort of federal or local aid or state level aid, you know, I think that you know, you have some of these schools that can kind of slip through the cracks. Again, not to point fingers, you don't know, was that side door unlocked? They're saying it was, but again, like Ken said, you know, post Sandy Hook and these other shootings, Columbine and all that, you know, I thought that just about every school was on board with some of these changes. So I don't get it. And again, the big debate over a school resource officer, you know, there is pushback by some people, particularly in urban areas. Well, we don't want an officer in there with a gun because too many kids get arrested. Well, you know, you wonder here. And again, Tennessee's not Connecticut. Tennessee's not New York or Chicago. I get it. Maybe there was a false sense of, oh, this won't happen here. But again, not to second guess here, but you wonder, had there been an armed officer, you know, in that school who could have radioed quickly and then, you know, maybe came up behind or in front of that shooter. You know, you wonder if the same numbers of those who lost their lives would have been that way or maybe less. Going to talk a little Barnum Festival for you. We've been having the Barnum Festival folks on the afternoon show for the last 2 or 3 years, keeping you up to date pre-COVID, during COVID, and post-COVID. And now that we're finally past the COVID thing here, Barnum Festival revving things back up to all the stuff they used to do and some new stuff as well. That includes getting back to the Cigar Nights. And joining us right now, former ringmaster and chair of the Cigar Nights. You know him well, the owners of Vazzi's Restaurants, John Vazzano's here. John, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Paul, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right.
Barnum Festival is in full swing, and you can tell by the warm weather, people are getting excited.
Absolutely, John, and I know I've talked with a bunch of you folks, and you must be excited now. And let's cross our fingers we never go back to the whole COVID thing, John. But I know that did put a big crimp in a lot of the activities. But from what I can tell, you guys and gals are revving it up, and everything should be back on track, right?
Oh, it's really going to be exciting summertime. George Estrada, our ringmaster this year, is incredible. He's reaching out to all networks, and we have so many events coming up. We have the the parade. Obviously, we have anybody who wants to see the events can go on barnumfestival.com and see the events. But he's bringing back a lot of the old shows. The bands are back. Parade, the Ringmaster's Ball at Sacred Heart University, a lot of different things, and he's really going strong at it.
Now, tell us about, John, this cigar night coming up to benefit the Barnum Festival. When's that coming up? April 3rd, I see. So tell us all
it's
about
it. April 3rd, the night of the Final Four basketball game. The final game is Monday night. Hopefully UConn's in it. It'll be nice.
All right.
But I've been doing it for local charities for the last 20 years, and this and with the pandemic, we haven't had it in the past few years. So me and George got together. We said we'll do it. We have Sean Lindetta, a giant legend, kicker. He'll be there. He's coming. He's volunteering his time to meet and greet the people. We have about over 100 so far. We like to get about 150, 175. And it's a filet mignon dinner. We have cigars from a cigar shop in Milford. It's called Cigar Junction. She brings her wares and she sells things. We have AV memorabilia. Anthony Vinci. He brings all. He'll bring a lot of Sean Lindetta stuff and Giant stuff and Mets and Rangers and Yankees. Stuff to bid on. It's all for a great cause. The Barnum Festival. We have to raise money for the community, and it's just a great cause. This is I have one more year of being president of the Barnum Festival, and for 2 years we did not nothing, but pretty much just. We're kind of stagnant because of the pandemic. But now I tell you, the volunteers are back. We got a lot of younger people getting involved. And that's because of George Estrada. He just reaches out to everybody. He's doing a lot. In the past, he had a cornhole tournament in Fairfield. He's got so many different things going on, and people are really responding well.
And, John, I guess it's one of those things, right, where you think over the years you get so used to having something. What's that old phrase? You don't know what you have till you don't have it, right? And you lost it. And I could pick up in your voice there, the excitement of, this couple of rough 2 or 3 years, but now everything is back.
It is, and the main thing is a lot of our volunteers are getting older, but we have that's Bridgeport, in Fairfield County, a real resilient community. So we're getting a lot of young volunteers. We have a car show in the outer community in Monroe, Connecticut, coming up. We have so many events. We need 2 hours to go over them all. But the thing is, if we don't get involved and bring our kids to those type of things and our grandkids, it's going to go away, unfortunately. And I think some of your listeners would probably remember some of their best memories were driving, to Kennedy Stadium, seeing champions on parade, or going to the parade itself, and going down to Seaside Park for the fireworks. And they're all back this year. So, really, I hope your listeners and the Bridgeport people, Fairfield people, Trumbull, Monroe, surrounding areas, really go online and see the events. There's something for everybody. There's something for everybody.
Let's cite the host committee, Larry LaConte, Vincent Noce, Guido and Mickey Picarazzi, Mike Morzerall, Mike Ranocchia, and Angelo
Maglioco.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of these are local business guys that, it's how they want to get involved, so they buy tables. And like I said, it's a great night to watch the game. And, when you have Sean Lindetta there, most of these people, unfortunately, or fortunately, are all Giant fans. I'm happy to be a Jet fan.
Oh, my God. You and me both.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Get on the phone to Aaron Rodgers right now.
I hope he comes. I don't know. But like I said, these are all local guys in business that, that sponsor things and, buy tickets to shows and events. And so, they're bringing their younger kids, when they say younger, 30, I'm going to be 60 soon. So, we got to get the young people involved. We got to get the people that are looking for things to do to go with their kids, spend time with their grandkids and kids. There's so many events. There's something for everybody. And George Estrada is doing a great job. And Charlie Carroll, who is the executive director, is, he's relentless. He just works tirelessly on this thing. And, it's going to be a great, great year. We have so many things happening.
Great. Okay, now to check all this out, folks, barnumfestival.org. Go online. We've told you about this website over and over again, barnumfestival.org. The weather's warming up, and as John says, all the great stuff is coming back, including the 15th annual Final Four Cigar Night. It benefits the Barnum Festival. It's coming up April 3rd. It starts at 7:30 p.m. The minimum donation is $125 per person, and there will be, sports collectibles there. There'll be Sean Lindetta, former punter from the New York Giants. So, John, why don't you give a final shout-out to the cigar lovers out there. Hey, listen, John, not a lot of places you can sit back and enjoy a good cigar, right? So folks should not get out anymore.
You know, with we're throwbacks, but we have great ventilation. We bring some fans. It's worth it. It's a fun night. And, you know, and we also have the boat trip, the cruise in Nowhere coming up with a great band from the Port Jefferson Fair. We got so many things. I hope everybody checks out the website and really gets involved this year.
All right, John Vizzano. Thanks, John. We'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, John. John Vizzano there. Yes, the well-known owner of Vazzi's Restaurant. $125 per person minimum donation. Now, for more info, 203-377-3067. Once again, 203-377-3067. $125, not too bad. That's the minimum donation. Of course, you can give more. The 15th annual Final Four Cigar Night benefiting the Barnum Festival April 3rd starts at 7:30 p.m. So check that out, the Barnum Festival. Bigger and better than ever.